pines where the sun never shines. You'll shiver when the cold wind blows. There's a grave in the pine where the sun never shines. There's a grave that's shaded with a pine.
On the Slay Queens podcast, we take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
This isn't just a cheesy catchphrase. It is a note to remember that the topics we discuss can be very graphic and lurid in nature. Listener discretion has been advised.
Hey folks, before we get started, I just wanted to pop on and let everybody know that this episode is edited by your podcast editor.
Yes, and we love our editor, and you can start your own podcast and receive 2 edited episodes totally free. You can find him on Instagram at yourpodcastedit and save time and take your podcast to the next level.
Ooh, Slay Queen.
Welcome back, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Ashley.
How are you?
I'm doing reasonably well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. Got my workout in.
I did as well.
Yeah?
Yeah,
good. I did. High fives for us.
What did I do? I did back and triceps today. And 20 minutes of cardio.
I had a push day, so essentially chest and shoulders.
Okay.
I think my coach is trying to kill me, though, with this 25 minutes of stair climbers at a level 7.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Whore and sweat. So I'm sorry if I'm stinky. I threw a big hoodie over me.
Okay.
Because I only had enough time to eat and do this before you got here. So hopefully it's not wafting over there.
I appreciate the sacrifices you make for this podcast. And you know who else I think probably does?
Yeah, the folks.
The folks.
Yeah.
The queens, kings, and folks. And we want to welcome them back to this place that we call...
The Slay Queens podcast.
That's right. And
that's us.
What do we do here?
We take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
That's right. We make all of those sacrifices for the folks so that we can take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
We do.
Welcome back, everybody. And if this is your first time joining us, just welcome.
Just welcome. Thank you for being here.
Exactly. Thank you for being a new friend.
A new friend.
And we hope that you will return so that we can thank you for being just a friend.
Yeah. And travel down the road and back again.
Back again.
Back again. That was good.
Did you like that?
We didn't plan any of
that. We
don't plan anything.
We really don't plan anything.
Really. We're not good planners.
We aren't good adults.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with because I always figured it would be that way.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Okay, so what shall we talk about for the rainbow star? And I don't think I've reminded people in a while what the rainbow star is, so I'm going to take the opportunity to do that now for those who are maybe new friends, as we've discussed. If you are a new friend, hi, welcome again. Here we do a rainbow star, rainbow because we are queer, star because we like to give spotlights, thank yous, make acknowledgements or announcements, and offer you folks recommendations. And we normally discuss what we're going to talk about.
I was just thinking, wait,
and
we didn't even talk about
we
this.
We literally did not discuss or prepare anything.
That's okay.
So
yeah.
I feel like you have something. You texted me the other day about a case or a situation that we wanted to discuss on the podcast.
For a spotlight? I guess that could be a spotlight.
Just something that someone, I think, had requested of you that we cover on the podcast. So why not spotlight it?
Yeah. So this is wild. I met a new client who, we'll leave her name out, of course, I tell a lot of people that like my part-time job is on Mondays. Like I do the podcast and everyone's always intrigued. And I love that. Cause like, oh, what's it called? Like, I want to listen. Love that. But this response was, I have something that you're going to want to talk about. And it was very serious too. And I'm like, okay.
That was unexpected.
Like, go on. And she goes, well, this is what she says first, right? She says, my mother-in-law killed her girlfriend's ex-husband. But now that they're in prison, they are my father-in-law. And I'm like, oh, so...
Her words, not yours.
Yes. I'm like, okay, so you have a transgender father-in-law. Yes. Okay. In prison for murder. This case is wild. I would love to talk about it like for a full episode.
Like a full
episode. I don't want to dive too much, but like, I'm just telling you, how do you happen chance?
I actually think seems like it would be appropriate.
I like
there.
That it's a happen chance.
How do you happen chance meet someone? Well, I say it happens by happenstance.
That's exactly right. Jeez Louise. But yeah, I was just mind blown by this. So I pulled up an article about this case before she left. And I was like, is this it? And she said, yes. So when we do cover it, it won't be like a documentary style where we're, you know, repeating that. But we're definitely going to talk about this because it's an interesting case.
And I think that's a good little segue into something that we haven't even discussed, just you and I off mic. And the fact that I love the format this season and the fact that we have these opportunities to watch and review these documentaries or these docuseries. But there are some cases that I do really want to share with the folks that don't have something that we can watch in that regard.
Sure.
So whenever we decide that maybe season 3 has officially come to an end.
That's fair.
And we start season 4, maybe we can do just like a nice combination of both. Hey, we really wanted to cover this story. There happens to be a documentary, a docuseries that we can refer to.
Definitely.
We really want to tell this story. There happens to not be, but we're still going to cover it.
Yeah.
So I think it was good that we spotlight that and the fact that we, I think, getting back to our roots, but retaining some of what people have really seemed to enjoy this season.
Definitely.
For next season. So maybe that's the plan. We've just made it.
Let's do it.
Let's do that.
We made a plan.
Yep. More to come on that, folks. And I think maybe now we are officially in thank you territory.
We are. What do we have?
I don't have anything like super specific, but we have gotten a lot of new followers on Instagram recently.
I love that for
we
us.
Really Yay. Are getting like tens and dozens of new followers a day on
awesome.
The Instagram. And just thank you to everybody
thank
who
you.
Is taking time to just look us up, hit that follow button.
Yeah, and I've had quite a few people that like I message with every now and then. I'm not loving it. Like just the interaction is so fun, especially like-minded people. Like, you know, sending, oh, did you hear about this? Or can you believe this? And all that.
That is absolutely my favorite part of being on this platform and people having access to us via diving into those DMs
That's
and whatnot
right.
is the interaction with the folks and the fans and this network of people who have mutual interests and live similar lives. And yeah, it's just really fun. It's really great.
We are the weirdos, mister.
Yeah. Hashtag 90s gabies
That's
with
right.
the craft reference.
That's right.
So what about announcements or acknowledgements? Do we have anything?
I have to tell you this. I have to acknowledge Dua Lipa.
Oh, please do. Daily.
But here, I just needed to say this to you with no like context at all, because we were at my parents' house. It wasn't this past weekend for Mother's Day. It was for my mom's birthday 2 weekends ago. And I can't believe I forgot to tell you this. But my dad said something about Dua Lipa, and Sierra doesn't know who she is. No, gay gasp, clutch your pearls, to which I say, walk away, you know how.
Don't start caring about Dua now.
Yeah. So now it's funny, we were in the car yesterday and I like put a song with her and that Levitate song on. And I was like, by the way, this is Dua Lipa. Mm-hmm. Bow down.
Check it, love it,
live
it.
So I was like, I know you've heard her music, but come on, girl, where are you living?
Yeah.
She did. She's like, sometimes I feel like I live under a rock.
I mean, I think most people in the world, at least 2020 till now, are feeling that
That's
way.
That's very fair. Definitely more recently,
living
for sure.
Living a very isolated sort of existence. And in all fairness, Dua Lipa, I mean, she's always been super talented, but it was the album that dropped during quarantine.
That's fair.
That really kind of made her blow up.
Yeah.
So if you're not a homosexual man, I completely understand why you maybe wouldn't have
it missed you.
Yeah, I can see why maybe you missed it or it missed you.
That's right.
Is that it?
That was just me acknowledging.
Acknowledging.
Yeah.
Okay, so I do have a recommendation.
Yeah, okay.
Hulu, which I know you have.
Yes.
And I know a lot of the folks do as well. I have recently discovered and started watching a new...
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
A new,
what's happening?
Air quotes, true crime docuseries.
Okay.
Called Sasquatch.
Holy. I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm
about.
Talking about?
I have not watched. I do have like people in my extended family that are like avid believers in things like the Loch Ness Monster and like Bigfoot and like go and like camp and like, so I feel like that's why I try not to dive into anything like that, because I'm afraid I'll fall in that rabbit hole.
Okay, so the interesting thing is that I'm not really a, like, urban legends in that way.
Sure.
Urban legends-y, paranormal, like, sort of guy.
Believer.
Yeah, believer. Like, that sort of thing doesn't interest me.
Sure.
But I am very interested in true crime, and true crime, obviously, and true crime is really just sweeping right now. It's super popular.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Podcasts, docuseries, documentaries, et cetera, et cetera. So what they've obviously done is they've taken the does it or doesn't it exist, like, mystery surrounding the Sasquatch, and they've forced it into this true crime genre by saying it's alleged that in 1993, three men were murdered in the northern part of California by Sasquatch. So this investigative journalist is investigating.
So it's about those murders.
It's about those murders.
Okay.
But in the course of investigating these murders, you have to kind of prove or disprove whether or not Sasquatch is even real, right?
Who would have even thought that that's what that would be about when I saw that thumbnail? I see it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just like, why is this under true crime?
So I've watched the first episode. The first three episodes are available right now as of the day that we're recording. I watched the first episode and I'm extremely entertained at how they are.
How they're making this happen.
How they're making this happen.
That's why I'm like, I'm titillated by
forcibly, this. Yes, how they are forcibly making the subject of Sasquatch fit into this, like, true crime mold or category.
No, like, I really want to know now.
Yeah.
I really want to, like, experience it for myself.
Everyone should.
Because that takes some serious creative writing, I feel.
Oh, it does. It does. And there's this, all of this information about cannabis farms in that part of California.
Okay.
And you meet all of these, like, people who are cannabis farmers and people who have worked on cannabis farms for many years. And people who have clearly smoked a lot of cannabis in their time.
I mean, this is piquing my interest.
It is very, very entertaining to watch these interviews with these, like, stoned out of their mind,
oh, yeah,
like, cannabis farmers, or these, like, super, super, super believers in Sasquatch, give these interviews and talk about their own experiences. There's this old gay couple who have this, like, sassy little fight. They're like, you believe that the Sasquatch is this. And he's like, bitch, I do not. You believe this. It's amazing. It's entertaining. Maybe not for the reasons that Hulu intended.
Sure, sure, sure.
But it's definitely entertaining. And that's my recommendation for the week.
Oh, so it's like an irony watch in a way.
Almost. Yeah.
It comes off like satire.
I was literally about to use that same expression. It comes with satire, but I don't think the satire was intended.
Yeah, they don't mean for it to be.
Yeah.
Okay, I can understand. I mean, kind of like Tiger King. Look at what that turned into.
That's true. It turned into
one giant joke.
Almost a cult following.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, so...
Does that bring us to the end? I don't think I have any...
I think that brings us to
all
the end.
All we've been watching is True Blood, so don't even...
Okay. Sookie.
Sookie.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and tell this... Let's just go ahead and say it.
Bonkers.
This bonkers story.
Bonkers.
All right, we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. And we're back.
We are back again, again.
Again, again.
Again, again, again.
And I get to be the recap queen this week.
You are the recap queen, and I am the research queen, although...
There's kind of a dead end.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this a few different times. These, like, solved cases and other factors at the end of this one doesn't leave a lot of room for update, but I did manage to put a little something together
I'm
for the
sure
folks.
You have some great information for us. You always do.
Well, thank you.
But I guess we'll start by talking about what the show is that we watched. And the name of the show is a Netflix series called Click for Murder. And the description says, crime journalist Donald McIntyre reveals how deadly the internet can be as he dissects the technological methods behind heinous acts. So the episode in particular that we have watched is episode 3, and there's only one season right now. It says, a police officer turns to a gay dating app for an easy online hookup, but an afternoon of kinky sex isn't quite what his killer had in mind.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
They emphasize that point.
About a bajillion times.
Many, many, many times.
I should have written down, like, how many times they reiterate, like, and that was the last time. and it was a fatal meeting. Like all of these cliches.
Casual sex, grinder. Casual sex, grinder. Kinky sex, grinder. Yeah, if I had counted how many times I just heard that terminology.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were even talking, like, this is a 45-minute episode that probably could have been done in, like, 15, 20, if there wasn't so much filler.
In, like, your classic Forensic Files format.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Totally could have fit into that.
Okay, so we quickly meet our narrator and host, none other than Donald McIntyre, as mentioned before. It's getting redundant. So he is here to explain to us that the internet has changed the way we do everything. It's changed the way we date and even the way that we kill. He also says that he is, quote, on a quest to reveal the dark side of our online world where one click can lead to murder.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's like the first time that they say that.
Yeah.
So in this program, Stefano Brizzi used a gay dating app to hook up with police officer Gordon Semples for sex. But when Gordon went around to Britzy's flat for their online date, I knew that was going to sound so ridiculous, saying it with an American accent. He went to his flat for their online date. He was never seen alive again. And then this is literally what you just did. Like, cue the opening sequence of dramatic text messages and buzzwords for gay sex.
Yep,
and murder and all that true crimey stuff that we're about to dive into.
Let's do it.
So now we're in London. Our host is driving in the car and he says, nowadays, we can have what we want when we want it with just the click of a button. That even applies to sex, because they didn't say that three times already. Hmm? But he does say that 1 in 4 Britons has a dating app on their phone. That means they can hook up with a new partner in a matter of minutes. To which I say, that's not news to us. We just need the dramatic effect of this episode. He has to say these things.
He does.
But as PC Gordon Semple discovered, sometimes convenience can be fatal. And I'm just like, yeah, we're really beating a dead horse here. They keep saying those things.
They do. They really, really, really want to just like
the dramatic effect.
Yeah, push forth that dramatic effect and make these points.
Yes.
And I don't disagree with a lot of what they say. I often say, just in day-to-day conversation, whenever social media and like apps and technology comes up, I say, you know, I think part of the problem with technology, part of the downside is that we have too much access to people at this point, and people have too much access to us.
Yeah.
So
it can do more harm than good sometimes.
It can, especially if we're not using it wisely.
Yes.
And we will understand.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. So now we flash to what they call a reconstruction, or what we would call like a dramatization. But I like reconstruction better. I think that makes more sense.
I much prefer that term.
Yeah, it makes more sense. On April 1st, April Fool's Day, which I noticed, 2016, Gordon Semples was looking for sex on the gay dating app Grindr. We see a man sit on a park bench and pull out his phone, like very suspiciously too. It's super dramatic in that, like, he's like looking around. Is anybody seeing me? Okay, let me pull out my phone.
Yeah.
Get on my secret dating app.
Like it's an episode of Mission Impossible.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. After multiple messages, only one man got back to him. Stefano Brizzi, a former city worker who worshipped Satan.
Okay.
Literally what they say about him.
Can I interject just one little thing here? Speaking of things that they emphasized and harped on over and over and over again, they kept harping on the fact that he had messaged like multiple people that nobody had gotten back to him.
Trying all day long.
You know, other than this one person. I mean, anybody who's actually experienced what it's like to be on one of those apps, you know the type.
That's
but also, if you happen to be the person who's maybe in a little bit of a hurry, because I think they mentioned on the episode that he had actually had lunch with a friend and was supposed to be going back to work, decided that he was going to take a little detour.
Yep, that's right.
And if you're in a hurry in those situations, what do? You cast a wide net and you hope.
Yeah, that's right.
See what you get.
See what happens.
So
Any takers?
I felt like it was a little bit disrespectful of PC Gordon Semple, right?
I agree.
Anyway, please continue.
So he invites Gordon to his flat, and the pair played, quote, kinky sex games. But when Gordon was tied up and helpless, Stefano turned on him, murdering him just 2 hours after they had met. But it's what Brizzi did to Gordon's dead body that left everyone sickened. And their more dramatic effect, and here we go. Flashback to our host driving. He says he's headed to London, where Gordon had worked and died. He says to try to understand why a respectable police officer would put his entire safety on the line for an afternoon of sex with a total stranger. PC Semple looked like he had it all, a family, a long-term partner of 25 years, and he was well-liked by everyone who knew him. And here's where I wanted to say PC, like how they keep referring to it, that stands for police constable. I had to look it up. Like they keep saying that. Like yeah. I know it has something to do with police, but what does it actually mean? But what's interesting is when I looked it up, it says police constable and it said a low ranking officer in England. However, they say here that Gordon worked at the Westminster City Hall where he was a senior officer in the antisocial behavioral unit. So I don't know if senior officer means higher up. Or if it just means he's been there, because he's been there for 30 years, they do say
too. I think, because I did a tiny bit of research about his career as well. Mm-hmm. I think it means that he was a senior ranking officer just because of the amount of time
that
he had been on the force.
Okay.
Now, don't quote me on that, but that was kind of my understanding as well.
So yes, he had been in the police force for over 30 years and was widely regarded by his colleagues as a caring, gentle, quiet man. And now we have the pleasure of meeting an old colleague, Nigel Lewis. I don't know why, I just loved him. I really liked him.
He was kind of a daddy.
He was.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why.
He was kind of a daddy.
And he's just like, his demeanor, like you can tell that he's a caring man, but mm-hmm. he even admits later, like there's a police officer in him. So it's like that, just like, I'm going to be serious.
I imagine he's had a few police officers in him. I mean, if I had to guess.
So this is Nigel Lewis. He says his friend was, you know, a soft sort of teddy bear in a way. Which you can tell by looking at this man, you know, you can tell just by looking at Gordon that he was just like a big, tough sweetie.
Or at least that was one side of him and his personality.
Yeah. He says he was a gentle speaker, so much so that he'd have to ask him to speak up so often because he couldn't hear him. He spoke more about his family than anything else ever, and he always talked about going to Scotland to see them. He says Gordon was like a dad or an older brother to him. So cut back to the drama or the reconstruction, and our host says, but Gordon Semple was not all he seemed to be. He had a voracious appetite for sex and a way of acquiring it totally unknown to his loved ones. Drama, drama, drama.
That was the one negative side to the victim, in my opinion, was that it seemed as though he were on Grindr soliciting sex and very specific types of sex and sexual activity unbeknownst and unknown to his long-term partner.
Yes.
That I have an issue with. I don't have an issue with openness in people's relationships sexually and whatnot, because I think it's 2021. We all know that there's not just one right or wrong way to be in a relationship.
Totally.
Right.
Right.
But the one thing I didn't like about PC Gordon Semple was this particular part.
Yes.
This is the only part of the victim that I didn't like, was that it seemed like he was doing this.
You.
Yeah, he was doing this behind his partner's back.
Yes, definitely. Well, now we talk a lot more about Grindr and what Grindr is and like the different verbiage people will use and all of this. But on Friday, April Fool's Day, 2016, after lunch with an old friend in central London, not too far from work, Gordon signed on to Grindr. So this is back to that moment that we had flashed to before. He signed into Grindr, and like you said before, instead of returning to work. Despite his long standing in the community, few of his friends and colleagues even knew anything about his personal life or indeed his sexual orientation. So now we meet Dr. Carrie Nixon, who is a forensic psychologist, who says, quote, he has a long-term relationship, but on the other hand, he presents himself as a straight man in work, which we've seen how many times before?
I have lived that sort of life at
one
point.
It's no surprise. Yeah. His friend Nigel says when Gordon joined the police service, it was a very difficult place to be gay or different in any way. He said, quote, to not be an average English white football-loving bloke was to be different. To which I say, hear, hear.
To which I said, duh.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, yep.
But he's saying
different.
It. Like, he's literally saying it.
He's like, saying it, and he's calling it out, which I sincerely appreciate.
Totally. And you're right. And I was like, duh, that's not news to us here, but cheers to that. Okay.
Yeah. Cheers to you for your understanding of it, at least.
He does say that in the last 10 to 15 years that it has changed dramatically. However, only him and about three other coworkers knew that Gordon was gay. He did say, though, that his role as an LGBT liaison officer was probably why he knew that it was safe for him to talk about it. And I was like, oh, I love him even more now.
Definitely an ally.
Yes.
If he's working in that capacity or in that role professionally.
Yes.
So definitely.
Helping, you know, troubled youth, especially in those positions. We all know how hard that can be. So now our host is meeting Matt Todd, an author who has been researching cases like this for years, exploring how even today, revealing your sexual identity can have serious consequences. And this is a really good conversation that they had there. Like, I really enjoyed listening to it. But this guy is an author of the book Straight Jacket, which I tried to, like, immediately go online and buy. It's really hard to find. Okay. I really want a copy of it. But it's, the book seems like it's kind of like talking about what it's like to be someone who puts on a straight jacket in that way of, like, you're going to work and you're presenting as someone else. The psychology kind of behind that. And I'm really intrigued by that. So if anyone's read it, let me know how it is. He does say that there was a recent survey that only 45% of gay people are out at work. And I'm guessing, obviously, that's going to be over there, not here. I guess I would venture to say here it's probably less, but I didn't look into that.
I think it depends. I think it's regional, definitely. I think it depends on the part of the country that you're in. Because here in the Midwest, I would think that those numbers are probably pretty
very low.
Yeah.
So this all somehow segues into us talking about how Gordon was good at keeping secrets because his long-term partner did not know that he was using Grindr. And then they have this conversation about how the author, Matt Todd, says it's not uncommon for people in any type of relationship to maybe have an open relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk about this, but the fact that he was seemingly like lying about this and having this whole other life is interesting because you would think he would talk about it.
Yeah, that's the negative side. And I think that universally, as far as like the victim here, that's what everybody's kind of universally saying is the negative side of it.
Like, definitely.
Why would you be lying? Why would you be deceiving? Sure, you like what you like, and that's okay as long as you're not hurting anybody. Well, in this case, you're potentially hurting your long-term relationship.
25 years.
Yeah, your long-term partner.
Or however long it's been. I don't even know.
That's the only thing that I heard or that anybody reported that was somewhat negative about the victim. And I keep saying that, but maybe it's just the program. It makes you repetitious because the program itself is repetitious.
It's very repetitious.
Yeah.
That is for sure. Sorry if we are too, but it's just we're on that ride now. We can't stop.
Yeah. We're on this roller coaster. We just got to wait until the end.
So now we get another lesson basically in what Grindr is again. But we are now told that Gordon is a submissive. And that's kind of where how he uses this terminology on here, trying to find a daddy essentially. And or a dominant, a dom daddy. And his friend is surprised. He actually like has this moment where he's like, honestly, like I would have thought it was be the other way around, which everyone always has a comment on that, right? They always have like, oh, I would have thought this. And it's like, well, you're not the one doing it. So.
Well, and that's kind of the point.
Right.
As someone who, and I am not going to use my private life as an example, but I will say work life versus home life, I can give an example of that. So I have to make decisions so much when I'm at work. I have to make choices, make decisions, and I have to do them in high stress, high risk situations, literally life and death decisions I have to make for sometimes 24 hours at a time, right?
Totally.
So when I leave work,
turn the brain off, put it in a drawer.
Exactly. Let me turn my brain off and don't make me make any decisions.
Yeah.
So whenever my fiance gets frustrated at me because he says, you know, what do you want for dinner? Or where do you want to eat? Or what movie do you want to watch? And I say, please don't make me choose. He gets frustrated at me, but it's because I need to find balance somewhere. So I need to turn that decision-making off. He doesn't always understand that. And I would equate this situation to that. He has to be that big, dominant, aggressive, masculine force in his professional day-to-day life. So he needs some balance. He needs a break from that. So he's going to the opposite end of the spectrum in this very private, personal situation.
And it absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
100%.
It's a lot more common than I think a lot of people realize.
Part of what I love so much about, I keep bringing this up because I've been watching it, CSI Las Vegas, is the fact that they do put Gil Grissom in a position like that, where he then does become a submissive to someone because I'm like, you are Daddy Grissom all the time, but like you meet this woman who's a dominant and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And I love, that's one of my favorite like things about him, even though he ends up marrying Sarah. But anyway. So now we are shaming Gordon for being on Grindr during work, is essentially what's happening at this point, and how he was looking for, quote, hot, sleazy, dirty sex. And now, before, right, they were harping on how he sent out all these messages. He started at like 10:26 a.m. Mm-hmm. and by 1-something p.m. he got a hit. Well, this is where we find out he sent out 3 messages. He got a reply to the third one.
Yeah.
The third and fatal message. I don't know if those were my words or if they were theirs.
I think they were theirs.
If I'm playing into what they're saying or if I'm just writing what they're saying.
Or something like the final and fatal message. Yeah, something along those lines.
And I actually wrote, like, yeah, they're really hammering this in now. So we see texts being exchanged in the drama of it all. And we're being told Gordon was desperate and needed sex right now. So he set it up, quote, because he had urges he needed to satisfy. Our host then says something to the effect of, if you look at both of these men and how little they have in common, it seems odd that they would, he says, want to have sex together. And I don't know why that just like hits the ear wrong. Like the way that he said it, I'm like, why don't you just say that they would want to have sex?
Yeah.
Weird. But yeah.
I think it's implied that it would be
together.
Yeah.
But he says that the need for sex right now and being available seemed to be all the encouragement that they needed. Which I'm just like, yeah, I mean,
that's most men.
That's testosterone for you.
I mean, legitimately is.
So, yeah, both of the men liked risky sex. We talk about this some more. Got it. Britzy was a man who was raised very religious. So now we're kind of getting a little bit of background on him. And it made a significant impact on how he viewed his sexuality, of course. He must have grown up believing, this is actually kind of the verbiage of what that forensic psychologist was saying. She says, that he must have grown up kind of believing that if people knew the real him, that they wouldn't love him, they wouldn't respect him, they would think he was dirty, sinful, and that they would think that something that he said himself would be true, and that's that he was actually from Satan.
They did mention that also
a few
times.
That he says that himself.
That was his belief.
Yeah. Which he was probably told that.
I imagine he was.
I mean, that doesn't just come out of nowhere.
No.
So in the early 2000s, Britzy was diagnosed with HIV and believed that it was actually a punishment from God. And that was for him being evil. It was like, hey, you're just this evil being, so here's your punishment.
Again, that's something that he was probably told or taught at one point in time, because that was huge even here, like in the States.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Oh, well, it's gay cancer.
Gay cancer.
God is punishing the gays because you've been
just
so wicked.
Just let it go.
Yeah.
Having a Catholic upbringing in Italy, Britzy felt his homosexuality made him sinful, so he moved to the more liberal London in 2012. He acquired a well-paying job and was doing pretty all right for himself. And by pretty all right, I mean like pretty well for himself. He was doing well. However, the newfound freedom amongst the gay community and also online dating apps led him to a habit of casual sexual encounters, which would be fine, but also there was this addiction to crystal meth that came too. So his drug use led to hallucinations at work, and clearly that would lead to him ultimately being fired. So they say that he got so bad that like he would be in meetings at work and just suddenly change whatever he was talking about to being talking about like tying men up and being violent.
Yes, I do remember that.
And all of this. And so at this point, you know, he loses his job. He's like, I got to do something. He seeks this self-help group. At this self-help group, Britzy is just sharing insane details of his life. Basically, like he was in these meetings, but now he's like, this is what I'm supposed to do. I can be open about it. And his honesty about sexual fantasies and being violent. And at this time, this wasn't working. I think people in this group were kind of like, I don't know how to take this. Like, we're not really welcoming this person with open arms because you're probably scared of this person. Like, I don't know what's going to happen here.
And the support group, I mean, I got a little bit of information. I honestly now I'm feeling like I'm just going to end up repeating a lot of what we already knew. But I got a little bit of information about the support group, and it wasn't a support group for like sexual addiction. It was specifically for the addiction to the drugs. So maybe they
was the wrong place to share.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they're like, okay, well, this is not the space for that.
Yes, that's kind of what thank you. That's what I was meaning to say. You said it in a very much more eloquent way. So thank you. Thanks for helping me there. But that's kind of what I meant. So at this point, though, this obviously isn't helping him. His drug addiction spirals more out of control and he's taking more drugs. And they say that he's basically just on Grindr like 24/7, like staying awake, high on these drugs, crystal meth, it seems, at this point, which you're not going to sleep for days if you're on an upper like that constantly.
Yeah, and then not sleeping creates like more psychosis and further hallucinations. And
This is the point, though, where we can sit back for a second and have a little chuckle. I was cracking up at this. Now our host makes a Grindr account.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, did you really need to make this a 45-minute episode? Is this what we're doing with our time right now?
I was legitimately, like, watching, like, jaw fully on the floor go, is this happening?
Yes.
Is he doing this?
Yes.
He is doing this.
He's doing it. He made a full-on account. He didn't put a picture up. This was interesting, though. I mean, he didn't put a picture up. He said he was 20 years old, and he got multiple hits just, like, right away. And I'm just like, I mean, some, like, he's proving the point. Some people just want sex right now.
Well, he was also really surprised by the fact that he was getting offers for sex, even though these people hadn't seen even a photo of this supposed person that they
exactly.
were talking to. And I do think that that information is probably very shocking to someone like him, or maybe even people like you. But as a gay man who spent a lot of years like single and on the apps, anonymous sex is highly fetishized right now
Absolutely.
In the gay community.
I definitely get that.
I can't speak for other communities, but I know in the gay community amongst gay men, anonymous sex highly fetishized right now. So,
and I can understand why, especially if you live somewhere where there's only so many gay people.
Exactly. These people, even if, I guess, in the end, like when the truth comes to light, it turns out that you knew them potentially, or you'd been with them before, or somebody that you'd encountered in your day-to-day life. Well, at least that time that you were physically with them, you were sexually with them, they were whoever you wanted them to be.
That's right. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
Woohoo. Jinx. So now we learn, let's see, at the same time that Gordon is planning his Grindr get together, he is also phoning his partner to make dinner plans, which that kind of just gives us that.
Leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah. The one thing we were talking about that we don't like. Our host at this point is kind of sifting through police evidence and tells us this because he's kind of looking at, he makes it very dramatic, but he's going through the phone records and he's like, well, I figured this out, that he must have been calling him at the same time. So Gordon's final secret journey, I can't believe I actually worded it that way. Gordon's final secret journey.
Secret rendezvous.
Was caught on CCTV footage. We see the man walking to Britzy's Central North home and arriving at 3:03 p.m. on that fateful April day. From this point, there is no online activity for an hour. But just after 4 p.m., both of the men hop on Grindr to start messaging people to join this party. A sex party. A bondage sex party, if you will. But why would Britzy invite more people if murder was in mind? And this is a question that, you know, he goes and he talks to these two other psychologists, and it's all fun and great. It's really interesting to watch, but it's just filler. I mean, they're just talking about the psychology of it all, things that we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
What's going on? Why would he do this? And basically, they come to the point of, like, obviously it wasn't planned.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say, is that it felt very much to me like they were making the point of, this clearly wasn't planned. This clearly wasn't premeditated. It's something that happened.
Something went wrong.
As the situation escalated. Exactly.
So they kind of just figure out something went wrong. And it's kind of upsetting what they generalize and think is what went wrong. And I'll tell you what that is. So our forensic psychology friend from earlier tells us that what she thinks happened is that when Gordon showed up, he wasn't exactly what Britzy had expected, like physically speaking. And, you know, here's Britzy, which they say he's like this handsome, you know, Italian man. And which I'm just like, what? No. I mean, I guess a little bit, but
I mean, guilty, because I thought he was a pretty handsome guy.
I mean, I can see it in the face. It's just the hair that gets me. Like when he puts his head down, I'm like, okay, just shave it. Like, just shave it off. Get rid of it.
Like, do a Jason Statham like sort of thing.
Yeah, that I could get down with. I could definitely see it then.
I agree. I don't disagree with that.
Get rid of it, though. So, yeah, they were saying basically that they just figured, like, perhaps that Britzy didn't have the same attraction to Gordon because he wasn't exactly what he thought he was going to look like or whatever, whatever. So he becomes passive aggressive.
I don't mean to be rude about that, though, but you still fucked him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you still spent an hour of time. And the dramatizations of, like, what these people think sadomasochistic sex is.
Oh, my God. Like, you should not be laughing at a scene in which, like, SM sex turns deadly, But it was so awkward, this like reenactment or
the
this
slapping. I'm like, I slapped myself on the face harder than that.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Why do you even do it? Why did you even make this scene happen?
Like, that was satire. That yes. was not intended to
and
be
he
satire.
He just like leans over and like it looks like he's like vampire sucking his blood, but all you see is the back of his head. And I'm like, yeah. This is clearly two straight men pretending to do that. Like, just cut it out. Just take this part out. It was ridiculous. I'm glad we got to talk about that. So, yeah, where are we here? So they say that he becomes passive aggressive, to which I say I don't think anything is passive about this. But Britzy's chronic drug use reduced his impulse controls, clearly, and the fact that he wasn't sleeping very much. And they pretty much just claim that the idea of strangling someone just kind of popped into his head as Gordon was in front of him. I mean, he's got this guy tied up. He's all hopped up on drugs, no sleep. And he's just like, oh, I could do that. That's probably exactly what happened in his mind, you know? So now Britzy is in his apartment. A dead man is in his bedroom, and there is a man showing up for a bondage sex party. And he kind of, you know, pushes the button and says, hey, I'm here for the gangbang. And and Britzy's like, oh, no, someone's sick. We've got it taken care of. It's over. The party's canceled. Go on home.
Yeah.
And this guy's just like, okay, thanks for the cab money. Like, bye.
Yeah.
I guess, like, I wouldn't think anything of it either. If I were that person, I'd be like, oh, yeah, maybe, like, they had too many drugs. Someone really did get sick, and now they're taking care of it. Not my problem. See ya.
I'm sure that's probably what he said, but I guarantee you this guy was like, I can't believe I cleaned up my asshole for this.
I was also thinking that, too. Like, I really just spent the last hour getting ready.
Just saying. Like, we know that it's a struggle for the bottoms out there.
I mean, trust me, we got to prepare too. I understand. So later that night, though, Gordon's partner ends up reporting him missing because, of course, they had dinner plans. And when he doesn't show, that's red flags. But he didn't know that he was on Grindr, so no one checked there, which does bring up the point of, like, you should just be honest. Because had you just been honest with your partner that that's something you were doing, you probably would have been found a lot easier.
Yeah.
So on the 7th of April, so just 6 days later, neighbors reported a foul stench coming from Britzy's apartment. We now meet a neighbor, Martin Harris, who says how terrible it was. He, even at this point being interviewed, just seemed so disgusted by this guy. Like, you could tell there was a strong hatred of Britzy with this neighbor.
Can we take a moment just to discuss kind of the awkwardness of that interview where they opened the scene of his interview just like hyper focused on his dog
that's
sitting
about?
In his lap. And then they kind of like pan out so that now you see this person.
Yeah.
And I'm a dog lover and I have my own dogs, but it was a little weird. No,
it was weird to me. It read like a like an old home movie that you made in like the 80s or 90s. You know what I mean? Like someone trying to be creative. And it's like, this is a documentary about murder. Why are we, what's happening here?
I agree. It felt like it was the wrong energy for everything that was going on in the whole episode.
Let's zoom in on this little puppy face and try to give you some good before the bad. Like,
and
that
he's like loving up on his dog where he was like, there was this really foul odor and just like, who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? So I went over and asked him about it and he clearly, you know, it was just weird.
So weird. Yeah. This is my service dog, so he has to sit here
all
the time.
Maybe could have been an emotional support animal.
Could be.
Okay.
Maybe he was,
I'll give you that,
just taken aback by this because I would be.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it just felt weird.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you said something because I wondered if you would. So yes, he talks about how terrible it was. He says it smelled, you know, like sweet, but then like acid and like citrus. And it was just like that. He's like, you know, it's just this one smell that you smell it, you'll never forget it again. So he goes to see Britzy because that's naturally what you would do when you think that you smell decomposing bodies and acid is you would go and ask, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on in there?
So he says that Britzy is cool as a cucumber and said that he was cooking for a friend. Where have we heard this before? I feel like there's something that we covered before. Maybe you're not going to remember either, but I feel like there was some cannibal that we covered where like a neighbor went to their house and asked about it. And he was just like, oh, I'm just like cooking like Indian food or something. And they were like, oh, okay, bye.
I don't remember the neighbor asking, but there was the case of Mr. Gay UK.
That's right. That's right.
Mr. Gay UK.
Who's doing similar things.
Who murdered his date and cut off portions
That's right.
of meat, like slabs of meat from his body and cooked them.
That's right.
And attempted to eat them. So maybe that's what you're thinking. Mr. Gay UK.
Yes. So spoiler alert here.
Oops, sorry.
We're getting there, but you know, it's happening. No, that's totally my fault because that's what they have in common, right?
Yeah.
So CCTV footage again shows Britzy purchasing the items that you would need in order to dispose of a body in a way that he had learned from none other than the show Breaking Bad. I don't even like that show, and I know the scene that they're talking about. I've watched enough of it to recollect. And even I, like, I don't have a hard time with gore, but even I have a hard time with, like, whatever episodes it is when this happens. Have you watched that show?
I haven't watched the show. I know the scene.
Well, because at first, like, he does it wrong. So it gets a lot more disgusting than it ever should be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also can't handle any scene, be it gory or maybe just alludes to the fact that these things are happening, but I can't handle the idea or the implication that someone's dismembering a body.
Yeah.
I can't handle that either.
Yeah.
And I can handle a lot of stuff. You and I both can. But yeah, that gets to me as well.
Yeah. So that's basically what happens is in the show, they dispose of a human body in a bucket of acid. In the show, he says, go get this bucket, put it in acid. And then he's like, I couldn't find a bucket big enough, so I did it in the bathtub. And then like the bathtub melts and it's just awful. So in any case, the buckets, though, that he's picking up, he's like seen like holding over his head, kind of seeing what a human head fit in here, would like these limbs fit in here. And it's very telling. Like they show these scenes and I'm like, he would pick up a pink bucket, too.
Yeah.
Ugh. Isn't it pink? It's pink, right?
I'm not sure. I think it was black and white CCTV that they showed us.
Oh, was it?
So it could have been red, but for the purposes of this podcast, it was pink.
I just was loving it. I'm like, well, you know what? Go out in fashion, I suppose. Murder, but make it fashion. He goes home, cuts up Gordon's corpse, and tries to dissolve it in acid because this is what Breaking Bad told him. And they're scientists, so they must know what to do, right? Even though Britzy told his neighbor that he was cooking, the police are still alerted, and on April 7th, they show up to his door. He greeted them at the front door wearing just pink underpants, which they do say, like, which is a little bit funny because in Breaking Bad, that's what Walter White, I think. He just wears, like, boxer shorts all the time. And I'm just like, it's not funny. Not a funny ha-ha, not funny coincidental. It's like, he does that on purpose. He's literally dressed like him. He did everything that he did. So when they enter the flat, they smell the rotting flesh and acid. And they just say it's like so overwhelming. It's obvious that that's what it is. So they ask if there is anything that he wants to say. And he just says, I killed a police officer. I met him on Grindr and I tried to dissolve the body.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, let's investigate here. So they see the body and they say that this is like an absolute just scene of carnage. So bin bags. I don't know exactly what that is. I think
trash
that's like
bags.
Trash bags.
Yeah.
Trash bags with body parts, buckets full of substances, just shit all over. Like, that's just nasty. Britzy had also tried to dispose of parts of Gordon's body in the river nearby. He said he would say a small prayer as a way of having a funeral.
This is clearly someone who is suffering emotionally, mentally, behaviorally, and he is very much struggling with this horrible thing that he's done. So I feel like that's a slight indication of remorse. Yeah, exactly. That's what I feel like that is.
It's like just the little moments of like sanity that you're getting back from this drug-induced just like rager you've been on. It's very Michael Alec.
It is very Michael Alec.
So he does say that he was certain that the devil had made him kill and that he was evil, quote, because of his gayness. They literally say because of his gayness. And I'm just like, you're all adults. How did that not get edited out? I don't know. Because of his gayness. In police interview footage, Britzy is asked if there was anything he did between April 1st and April 7th. And after a long, no comment.
No comment.
No comment.
Even though he had confessed.
Literally just said.
To the people.
I met a police officer on Grindr. I killed him. I chopped up his body. I tried to dissolve it.
Yeah.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah. He confessed to the people who showed up at his home, but by the time they got him down to the police station and they were actually formally interviewing him, I guess he'd had some time to think about it and said...
He saw the camera on him and was like, no comment. He's like, no comment. I recant. This is because once at the station, he claimed that the death had been a tragic accident during a sex game gone wrong, which I say even after confessing at his apartment, which is what we talked about. So now we talk about how strangling really can't be an accident. It takes minutes, not moments, which I like how they said that. It takes minutes, not moments. We will say that probably from here on out. I like that. They also found high levels of ketamine, which, if you don't know, is an animal tranquilizer. So imagine taking that. It's basically, I've taken it before on accident when I was younger. Fun story, not so fun story, but I literally could not move.
Yeah.
Like, could not move a limb.
And Special K for special those K. of you out on the street.
I should say Special K.
Yeah.
And THC had been in his system. His friend Nigel says this was, I liked this. It was a bit like hearing your granddad has been taking cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, that's how shocking it was to him. And I'm sure that it would be. So police officer of his, like, stature for 30 years, and you find out he was on ketamine and THC. Wow, that's intense.
I truly wondered, though, whether or not he used those drugs intentionally, or if maybe...
I wondered the same thing.
Yeah,
if it was, like, forced or not known. Or
if he had been given, like, a spiked drink.
Exactly.
Because we've heard of that sort of thing as well.
Definitely. And that could easily be a way to
have... Stephen Port did that to his victims.
Easily be a way to have Special K, especially in your system. So basically, we're having this mental break. Britzy has this cocktail recipe for just absolute disaster. All of this happens. And back in Britzy's apartment, we learned that it was clear that an attempt to get rid of Gordon's body, Britzy had taken part in cannibalism, which we kind of hinted at on accident before.
Oops, my bad.
But there were bite marks on certain body parts and DNA on chopsticks. When they said DNA on chopstick, I was just like, eh.
See, I had a worse reaction to the fact that they said that there were teeth marks or bite marks on Gordon's ribs.
Ribs. Like, are you trying to eat them like actual, like, ribs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But, like, why chopstick? Whatever. I'm not going to try to understand that ever. Britzy then faces a jury and is being charged with murder and an accusation that he denied. He just kept denying it at this point. So he says it once and then he's deny, deny, deny. He was very calm, no sense of emotion, and despite his pleas, he was found guilty on all counts. On December 12th, 2016, he was sentenced to life in prison and ordered to serve a minimum of 24 years. But he served just 2 months. At this point, though, I'm just like, what the fuck? I literally am screaming at the TV. Sierra's like, what? I'm just like, what the fuck? And then, of course, they say, on February 5th, he took his own life in Belmarsh prison. So, wah, wah. Our friend Nigel, though, says that he was not surprised. And I do love how he just, like, surmises all this. You know, he's like, he says, I don't care. Like, I don't think about him. I don't have any feelings towards him. Nothing about that man will ever have an effect on me because, and he says, I don't have a strong feeling about him. And he says, perhaps when the police officer has gone from me, I will feel some sort of way towards him.
Yeah.
But it's sort of that admission of, like, I need to have this tough exterior. I need to not get too emotional right now. My friend's gone. No, this guy's awful. This guy's gone too now, though, so he can't hurt anyone else. There's no chance he's going to get out of prison. He does say he's not going to suffer in prison. But at the end of the day, he's gone.
He's gone.
So I don't need to think about him. He shouldn't matter to me. And here. That's such a good
Cheers
way
to, that.
To think about it if you can, if you're able to compartmentalize in that way and say, I know I'm going to have issues with this later, but I'm going to deal with it, cross that bridge.
And I think there are a lot of people who work in public service.
Absolutely.
And emergency services and in a first responder capacity who have to compartmentalize their feelings about all of the horrific things that they see and experience on a regular basis. And then by default, by habit, they end up doing that in their own lives as well. So I can kind of understand where he's coming from when he says, once I no longer have to have this strong exterior of the police officer, maybe then I'll feel differently. And maybe then I'll actually feel these feelings. But as of right now, if I allow myself to feel anything, I have to feel everything and it's going to tear me apart.
Yeah, I like that. That's exactly the vibe I was getting. So just to sort of wrap it up, we end with our host warning us yet again about dating apps. And the final words, even Sierra just goes, wow, that was aggressive. He says, if you're using dating apps, take care. And I'm just like, geez, Louise, man, what a way to end that.
You know what? I want proof that he deleted his Grindr profile. I'm just saying.
Because he even said, he's like, this is not incredibly like discerning. Like I'm like, he seems like he's into this. He seems intrigued.
Yeah.
Especially the fact that the one guy who messaged him at first, he's like, he's 1 kilometer away. And I'm just like, he's seeing how easy this is.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that guy's right there.
I'm intrigued.
So yeah, I'm intrigued to hear your little information tidbits that you've found for us.
I don't have a lot. I'll just be giving a few more details of That's things fine. That I think we've already heard. But as we all know now, this case was solved and
neat little ribbon like tied around it,
and
basically.
The perpetrator is no longer alive. So there's not a lot that can be updated here, but I have a little bit of information. So we'll take just a quick break, come back. I'll give that and wrap this thing up.
For sure. And it's time.
It is time for... really not a lot.
Whatever you've got.
Which isn't much.
Lay it on us.
We were talking before and we were talking off mic about the fact that this is a pretty open and shut case. So unfortunately, there's not a lot of information out there for updates and whatnot. But I did put a little something together and hopefully this gives us just a bit more insight into who these people were and what happened. So first, let's learn a little bit more about PC Gordon Semple. The following information was obtained from a November 2016 article written by a person called Stuart Findlay, like Findlay Market here in Cincinnati. And it was published in the Sunday Post. Yeah, I love Findlay Market. And we appreciate the work of Stuart Findlay.
We do.
And I also love the Sunday Post. It's great, 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 great. Love the Sunday Post.
I agree.
The kind-hearted Beat Bobby had hoped to forge a career with the Mets fraud squad, but instead found unexpected happiness working one of Britain's toughest neighborhoods. And for anyone who's unfamiliar, because I myself had to look it up, a Beat Bobby is a UK slang term for a member of London's Metropolitan Police. PC Gordon Semple. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I love that term.
That's cute.
Yeah, it was really cute. PC Gordon Semple was based at Peckham Police Station in Southeast London, an area which commonly suffers from gang-related violence, muggings, and murder. He became an employee of the Bank of Scotland straight out of school in 1973 and worked in Inverness, Dundee, and London before joining the Metropolitan Police in 1986 at the age of 29 years old.
Wow.
Gordon thought his banking background would result in a swifter transfer to the fraud squad, but instead, he found his calling in patrolling the capital's streets.
I just love the term fraud squad.
Fraud squad.
Fraud squad.
It makes me think of something very, like, 70s.
Yeah.
You know, like, something like that.
Like, it should be, like, a bunch of, like, hot chicks and bell-bottoms that are, like, FBI agents.
Very, like, Charlie's Angels, but in the UK.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. I agree with you 1,000%. Although widely respected by his colleagues during his 30 years of service, a promotion would have taken him away from the daily contact he enjoyed with the people in the street. According to Gordon's brother, Ronnie, he, quote, loved it. He loved the community feel of it and never wanted a promotion. We couldn't walk past any big pub or club without them stopping and shaking his hands, said Ronnie. He was well-known and well-respected by everyone.
Ugh, that just makes me, like, want to hug him even more.
Right? Although he admitted what happened to his only brother still keeps him up at night, Ronnie said his memories of Gordon are of a funny, generous, and kind man, and that those memories will always be with him. This was a man who led drives to raise thousands of pounds for cancer research at his local pub in Kent, a proud Highlander fan who followed the Scottish national football team home and away around the world, and who was a loving companion to his partner, Gary Meeks, for 25 years. More than 400 people turned up for his funeral in June of 2016, with his police colleagues serving as the pallbearers at his service.
That's beautiful and wow.
Yeah.
Wow, wow.
He was a very beautiful man who led a beautiful life and did not deserve to meet the end that he met. All right, so who was Stefano Brizzi? I have a little bit more information about that
guy,
too.
I'm sure there's plenty of information about him that...
Actually, there's not. I was honestly surprised that there wasn't more information out there about this whole case.
Yeah.
So this information...
Well, it wasn't that long ago, too, I will say.
That's true. It was fairly recent, so maybe give it a little bit of time. This information I got from a February 2017 article by, and forgive me if I meant to mispronounce this, it's written by Lauren Fruen, F-R-U-E-N, published in the UK Sun, as well as an April 2018 article by Nadia Kamami in The Guardian. And just a bit of forewarning here, this guy is fucked. Right? I think we can all pretty well agree to that.
He tried to dispose of a body in a way that he saw from a TV show. Yeah. So
we talked about a lot of just like behavioral, mental issues, a lot of psychosis, both like drug-induced and lack of sleep and all these things that contributed. But I mean, this guy is a monster. He's fucked. I'm not saying that people who suffer from mental health disorders are monsters and that they're fucked, but this guy specifically is fucked.
Yeah.
And he says a lot of nonsensical BS, so I have a lot of direct quotes in this information. So when you hear it and it doesn't make sense, it's not me not making sense this time.
It's just verbatim.
It's just verbatim. All right, so Stefano Brizzi, a 50-year-old Italian national, was a former 70-pound-a-year web developer for the financial giant Morgan Stanley. He said he had to quit his job in February of 2015 because of a crystal meth addiction, but believed he could kick the habit eventually and return to the job market. He told police, quote, "I lost my job because I had a job, but I wasn't able to keep the job because I was constantly high on drugs. I had a job, but I lost that job," end quote.
Just redundant, just like the episode
was. Yeah, just
was.
Like the episode.
We're just keeping with the theme.
The former web developer said he...
I just can't buy that a web developer became a crystal meth addict. Like, that's just so random to me.
I mean, anybody can...
Anybody can, I suppose. It's just so random.
Yeah, it is pretty
How
random.
Do you find it? I guess, I don't know. Anyways, go on.
I mean, London's a party city, right?
That's fair.
So...
That's fair.
Maybe it's easier than one would suspect. But the former web developer said he tried to visit a psychologist and a crystal meth addicts support group, but claimed, again, this is a direct quote, "The problem with the psychologist is that they said that crystal meth caused psychosis. I was raised Catholic. Being gay was evil and the devil. So I've been into Satan," quote.
That was my answer.
That was his answer. Yeah, that was the answer.
I mean, I guess if you're taught that, like, you are, I don't know.
It's a lot.
I can't wrap my head around anything he thinks, I guess.
He was believed to have been living a nocturnal lifestyle after quitting his job in the months before the alleged murder, or the murder that he was ultimately convicted of. During their investigation, police found that Stefano had a copy of the Satanic Bible downloaded to his computer, as well as a notebook containing handwritten notes to the devil. However, in court, the man claimed to have an intellectual interest in Satanism, but denied being a follower of the religion. And I do also want to say here that I understand that people who do consider themselves a part of Satanism as a religion are not garbage monster murderers.
Sure,
yeah,
definitely.
We're not saying that.
No, definitely. I'm with you.
Stefano did further describe himself as, quote, "hostile towards Christianity," saying, "I hope I have the right to have my views," end quote. He just made no sense.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all.
So we know that Stefano Brizzi, who later became known actually in the UK as the cannibal cop killer. Yep.
Oh, Lord.
We know that he was sentenced to life imprisonment with a minimum of 24 years, or to serve a minimum of 24 years for the strangling and dismemberment of Gordon Simple, whom he met on the gay dating app Grindr. What we didn't get a ton of details about was his death. At the age of 50, Stefano died by suicide in his cell at the Belmarsh prison on February 5th of 2017. He had been placed on heightened observation, or what would be considered like a suicide watch type thing.
Okay.
He'd been placed on heightened observation while first placed in prison, but was taken off of that watch around 1 month before his death.
Okay.
He left a will as well as letters to his family and friends on his bed, which included phrases such as, "I die in peace." Stefano was described by his overseers within the prison as an atypical prisoner with a high intellect who was frustrated by the limitations of prison life.
Wow.
And that's all I have.
So he basically just, it wasn't like he was remorseful or he hated himself. He was bored.
I'm glad that was your take as well, because literally after I finished compiling my notes, I had the exact same thought process. I was like, okay, so basically what we're saying is that he didn't have any remorse. He wasn't sorry. He didn't feel badly for what he had done. He was bored in prison and didn't want this to be the next 24, possibly like up
however
to
long of his life.
However long of his life, years.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. And to that we say,
watch your step. You just walked into some bullshit.
Exactly.
Ugh.
And that's all we have for this episode.
I mean, I'm glad that you did give that information, though. That was a lot of things that I was wondering about that I now have answers to, which makes me feel better, at least.
Yeah. Not that most of the things that he said directly made any sense, but now we know a little bit more about what an amazing person Gordon was and how Stefano, unfortunately, it sounds as though he went to his grave being a garbage person.
Mm-hmm. He never had a shot.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, here we are.
Here we are.
Gave us an episode to talk about.
Gave us an episode to talk about, and that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
To shed light on these stories. And I mean, we can find a common theme here with regard to, not common to everything that we talk about all the time, but at least some things that we've talked about in the past, where we have to question whether or not if this person hadn't been told from essentially his inception that everything about him was evil and bad and wrong, would he have turned into this evil and bad and wrong person?
Right.
You know what I mean? So again, stop teaching your children, or anybody for that matter, that being gay or being queer is wrong and that they need to change, because they don't.
They do not.
So on that note, it feels so somber.
Right? What do we do?
What do we do? People can dive into the DMs.
Yeah.
If
they
want.
Give us some ideas. Tell us some things you've been watching.
Where can they do that?
We are Slay Queens Pod pretty much everywhere, but we've got a Gmail account, slayqueenspod@gmail.com. Slay Queens Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Patreon. We're on Patreon. We've got some
Patreon
new members. It's so fun.
Yeah. Oh, and thank you, new members.
Yeah.
Thank you, new members. We will give you a shout out by name soon, but we didn't quite prepare that this time. So.
That's right, because I totally forgot. Yeah, but we love you. Thank
we
you.
Love you. We thank you so much. I don't know if we've mentioned it before, but we are busy, busy people.
Yes.
I literally.
But we're trying to grow this queendom.
We're trying to grow this queendom. So thank you, thank you, thank you all.
Yes.
And we appreciate you listening. And if you happen to be listening on a platform, we're available on all of them, by the way. If you happen to be listening on a platform that will allow you to rate and review us, please rate
do.
And review us.
Please do.
How many stars?
All of them.
All of the stars.
Which
all
would
of
be
the
five
stars
out
that
of
are
five.
Available. Yeah. So thank you so much, Ashley.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
And thank you to all the Queens, Kings, and folks. And I think we just have one last thing.
Yeah, we should tell the folks to go out and slay, Queens.
Just not
each other.
Not each other.
And not anyone you meet on Grindr.
Yeah. Or anyone that you meet on Scruff.
Ever.
Or
Match.com,
Match.com, Tinder.
Farmers Only.
Growler. Growler's the one that I was trying to think of.
Bumble.
Yes.
Bumble.
Just don't kill people.
Just don't kill people. Don't kill people. Okay,
bye.
Bye,
folks.
I'm going away, but I won't come back on a lonesome railroad line. But I can't forget that sweet little girl who sleeps in the pines.